Welcome to the Ask Sensei Tony podcast, where Sensei will address your questions about life from a cosmic perspective. Please subscribe and ask a question at AskSenseiTony.com to find out more about studying with Sensei privately, becoming a part of our spiritual community, and training to become a mindful minister of oneness in our seminary. We hope you enjoy this episode and find it helpful.
Hi, this is Sensei Tony. Today's question comes from Jack. And Jack says, "Dear Sensei, I am in my 70s and facing some chronic health issues. Everyone around me is telling me that I just have to go along with what's going to happen in terms of my treatment, and I'm starting to feel as if I'm no longer in control of my life." Thank you, Jack. So Jack's question is something that most of us are going to face at one point or another in our lives. If we're fortunate, some of these issues won't face us till we reach our middle period of life. And I can relate in some way to what's going on. Now, I'm younger than you, Jack. I'm 56. And that being the case, and that I'm feeling good and I'm feeling strong, the reality is that I inherited an immune disorder in my family, and I've also dealt with some health issues, and I had a cancer scare last 2 years ago. And you know, the thing that I've learned is that in these sort of situations where, you know, like maybe we get a diagnosis of some kind of chronic illness, or maybe even, you know, when I was a chaplain, I used to work with a lot of folks, and I still do to this day, who sometimes get a diagnosis that is fatal, or they won't be able to do any more treatment or recover from. And those are some of the toughest parts of being human, being alive. And so my first response is always one of empathy and caring. And hearing what the ego self, you know, has to say. Because when we get something like that, our ego self's reaction is usually one of fear, the drive to survive at all costs. And often we have a sense of powerlessness. And then sometimes people will take the other route, which is it's like the same coin but a different side. And that is where they'll start to just deny that they have a problem, that there's anything wrong. And so I think both of those approaches that the ego self will utilize, depending on our personality, and, you know, a lot of people vacillate back and forth between those. Those are just normal ways that the ego self is reacting to what's happening. And remember that the ego self is not something that we want to look down upon, or we want to somehow think is a problem. But rather we want to embrace the ego self compassionately and learn to care for our ego self. And when we do that, that's the easiest way to stop the overinflation of the ego or the submission of the ego. And when we embrace our ego self from the perspective of our true nature, our true selves, then we can begin to care for it, and we can gently allow it to sort of allow our true self to take over and run the show. And a lot of times, as many of you know, I use the metaphor from my ego self is little Tony and my true self is big Tony. And you know, little Tony, you know, of course, little Tony was born here and he's going to end up hopefully somewhere way out here. But eventually little Tony's experience will come to an end. And while I believe the story continues, it will continue in a different way, in a different experience. But our true nature, our true self, the ground of our being, is that which we can turn to sustain us and to carry us through all of our various experiences. And so particularly, if you've read my new book, The Three Principles of Oneness, How Embodying the Cosmic Perspective Can Liberate Our Life, Liberate Your Life, the second principle of oneness is the one that I think is most appropriate to begin with. So what's the second principle? Well, the second principle says that if we are seeing life through the eyes of separation, through the delusion that we are not connected, that we don't belong, that we're separate. If we see it through the eyes of separation, then, and we're honest, then yeah, life is impermanent. Things are constantly changing. Things are constantly transient and contingent. And that's a reality that science teaches us about the nature of the universe. But when we get a bigger cosmic perspective, where we see not just that aspect, but we also see the whole picture, and by the whole picture I mean that we have learned to awaken and see things through the eyes of that awareness, where we aren't separate, we are connected, and we belong, then the magic here is that the second principle teaches us that when we see things through the eyes of oneness, that impermanence, that transiency, that constant change is something that can be turned into an opportunity to create something new. And so what we learn, or a metaphor that we can learn from the universe or from the cosmic perspective via the second principle of oneness, is that we can realize that every opportunity, every crisis or every change is an opportunity to create something new. Now that is something that we should take on, I believe, if possible, in a very gentle and systematic way. So, you know, I may not be ready yet to see certain changes as opportunities, but I can learn to do that gently in smaller things in life. And then as I progress, I can expand that into all areas of my existence. So, you know, like you can start simply with, you know, something you planned on doing doesn't work out. Like, for example, let's say you wanted to see your favorite movie and the movie sold out, or you wanted to go to your favorite restaurant and there are no tables left. And, you know, or you go on vacation and it rains. You go to the beach, and if you go to the beach, certainly up northeast here, you know, there's a great possibility there's going to be rain. I've always, my favorite place in the northeast to go is my beloved Cape May and the Cape May Island in New Jersey. But when you go there, you kind of have to think of it like visiting the shore in England. You know, there's going to be some rain and some fog at times, and it may not always be really warm. So you kind of accept, you kind of learn to realize that this is just something that happens. But when it does rain, you know, obviously, you know, you spend a lot of money, you have a little bit of time off. That kind of change can be a microcosm of the bigger changes that you'll face in life. So if you can learn to take something like that and turn it into an opportunity to create something new, a new experience, and something good and something beautiful out of it, then you'll be able to begin to do that in bigger things in your life. And you know, it's normal for us to get hooked by those things. And again, the first step is to acknowledge how the ego self is feeling. Because if we don't acknowledge how the ego self is reacting to something, then we'll have a tendency to just ignore it or be in denial. And the thing is, the other thing we learn from the cosmic perspective is that just as in the universe there is entropy, there is also the reality that new things only come into being by the entropy of other things. And so, you know, you can't create something new without something else changing greatly. You know, and the metaphors that, you know, you might get from a farming example would be that, you know, and it's sort of like the words of Christ, you know, except that the seed fall to the ground, you know, just no new life can happen. And to each season, there are these changes, and these changes allow new things to come into being. So if we want to get into harmony with the way the universe really is, then we'll start to see change, especially if we've, you know, awakened to that cosmic perspective of oneness. Then we can begin to work with those things in gentle ways. And we start by acknowledging how we're really feeling. And then once we get that out of ourselves, you know, then we can begin to kind of focus and think creatively. How can I turn this, what seems like an unfortunate experience, again, I'm using the analogy of vacation, into something beautiful and something good. And once we get into the practice of that, and we train our minds to be our ally in that sort of situation and not our enemy, then we'll find that it's easier to do it with the harder things. And, you know, with the harder things, I've noticed that when we kind of look at them as opportunities, we feel a little guilty, like we shouldn't be doing that, like we ought to just be feeling bad. And while I say, again, you have to honor the ego self's reaction, you want to do that within this container of the true self, so that the ego self is resting in the embrace of the true self. And then the true self can gently whisper and guide the ego self through that still small voice to the opportunity that's here. What's the opportunity? And the way that I've seen that played out in some of my mentors' lives is that when they were facing, you know, later in their life, these kind of challenges, I saw them, you know, use those as opportunities. I've always been so impressed by certain people that have been mentors in my life. And I think of people that I've had the pleasure of meeting, like Sir Roger Penrose or Jack Spong or Bernie Glassman, you know, and just seeing how, I remember asking Roger, you know, he had just come out with a new book and he was 85. And it was just amazing to see him traveling around the world in support of this new book he had written at 85. And Jack Spong, I saw him not long before he had had a stroke. And I think he was turning 86 at that time. And he had just completed a new book and was working on finishing another one, which he did complete after he recovered from the stroke. Same thing with Bernie. When he had his stroke, I had the great pleasure of meeting with him a little bit after that, and then I actually recorded an interview, and then I wrote an article for Lion's Roar magazine and about this, so you can look that up, Lion's Roar magazine, Bernie Glassman, and then my name. If you do that search, you'll find the article. And it was just incredible to see that way, you know, the way that Bernie had used this experience, which was, you know, very devastating and tough, you know, but he had used it as an opportunity to grow. And that growth wouldn't be possible if he hadn't already created the foundation ahead of time. And that's why it's so important to engage in a daily practice, because that kind of accumulation of experience of our practice is there for us then whenever we go through these tough times. And we are able then to embrace the second principle of oneness, and we can turn those into opportunities to create new things and to become renewed and to further evolve spiritually. And that's what I saw in Bernie. So those people have always served as great inspirations to me. And as I get older, and I'll speak about this more in another talk, but I always think of going from the idea of aging to saging. that I just don't want to focus on aging as just this process of maybe of decrepitude, or where I'm just going to basically become less and less useful, etc. But rather see it as saging, where I'm getting into this place in my life where I can begin to share the experiences I've had, and hopefully make the world a little better place, and maybe for certain people that are drawn to it, maybe like yourself, make the world, make their world better. And so that's the critical insight. And the second thing I would say is that there's a difference to me between accepting something on the one hand and resignation. You see, for me, resignation comes from a place of powerlessness. Resignation comes from a place of a lack of clarity. Whereas acceptance comes from a place of clarity and a place of self-empowerment. So for example, if when I, you know, realized that I had this immune disorder and I began to suffer some of the effects of that, you know, of course I, you know, went to my doctor and the doctor gave me a program for treatment and so on. But the most important thing there was, is that I, you know, I remember having this conversation with my wife after that, after we had had the doctor's appointment. And I said, look, I said, you know, I'm not going to resign to this, because that's coming from delusion and a sense of powerlessness, which leads to all kinds of unfortunate stuff. I am going to accept this as a part of my life, but I'm also going to continue to use this as an opportunity to create something new. And so what did I do with that? It gave me the insight. I mean, I always was very compassionate and empathic, but it gave me a new sense of that when people are going through these sort of things. And it gave me a new sense of confidence that if I could work with this in my own life, that maybe I might be able to help model a way of being for others going through a similar situation. But resignation is where then, you know how it happens. You know, people, it becomes their whole existence. You know, you meet somebody and you start telling them about all your ailments. And listen, your ailments, like your suffering, those are the least interesting things about you. They're the most universal things about you, and in the sense that everyone has these issues. And eventually everyone's going to follow the law of second law of thermodynamics, and they're going to experience entropy. So, you know, no one gets out of here alive. So there's a point where you have to decide. It's an existential choice. How you want to live. How shall I then live? And what the second principle teaches us is to accept things and bring them into our life. Don't deny them. We bring and integrate the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we find a way to create an opportunity out of that crisis to create something new, something beautiful. And so, by employing the insights that we gain from the second principle of oneness in these sort of scenarios, we can take action and engage, and we can learn to turn that into something good. And in my own experience with that, I started to study, you know, that particular issue, and I began to inform myself. And I think that's very important. I think too many people just rely on their physicians. And I think you have to sort of, in some ways, become your own physician. Certainly you trust the experts, but you also have to trust yourself and realize that doctors are human and they're imperfect. So we can't, you know, you don't want to project perfection onto them and then get upset with them if they make a mistake or they don't see something. You have to kind of take control of your own life. You have to take your life back. And I began to look at certain treatment protocols that were put out there for me, and there are some that I just decided I wasn't going to do. I wanted to do more research and find out what I could do myself to enhance my treatment. And so, you know, I'm a pretty strong personality, so my doctor realized that that's the way it was going to work. And so we worked together as a team, and I didn't just resign myself to whatever he said I should do or not do. I accepted what was happening, but I also decided that I was going to be an equal partner in this because it's my life. My life. And so by doing that, I've been able to find modalities that have helped to heal some of those side effects. And I continue to live with it, but I feel fantastic. And I'm able to continue. I didn't allow, when I had those flare-ups, I didn't allow that to become my reason for being. And I certainly didn't allow them to stop me from doing the things and the projects and the different creative things I wanted to do. I didn't allow that to stop me. And, you know, it goes back to that question, you know, what would you do if, you know, you found out the end of the world was tomorrow? And I say, well, I'd plant a tree. The same thing is true for my own individual life. If I find out that the end of my life, personal experience, is going to, this particular plane of experience is going to end, and by God, I'm going to live as if there's another tomorrow. And it's not easy. And like I say, you have to start out from a place of compassion, and not just for yourself, but you have to be empathic towards the people who care about you, because they're going to mean well, and they're going to want to take care of you, and they're going to want to help you, but they're also going to then potentially start to treat you sort of childlike and become a little parental. And that may work for some people, but that even when that happens for some people, then it turns into resignation, and they become more, you know, childlike in a negative way. Not the positive aspects of a happy child, but the adapted child, you know, that has to react to all that parental criticism or parental, you know, overbearing way of coming in. We have to work with our caregivers and the people that love us in a way that we did, as I mentioned, with the doctor, that we're partners in this. And so, you know, we learn to accept help, and we can embrace it as a part of that acceptance without resignation. And that allows us to also be mindful that those who are going through this experience with us are also, you know, experiencing pain and perhaps suffering. And so we can also administer to them and provide what succor we can for them. So there you go. So the lesson is, through the second principle of oneness, we learn, Jack, that we can see our life in the context of this big cosmic perspective. So whatever is happening now, we can learn to gently turn that into an opportunity to create something new. So I look forward to hearing what that is for you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask Sensei Tony. Please visit our website at AskSenseiTony.com, check out Sensei's books and videos, and become a part of the Dragonfly spiritual lifestyle.